When it comes to weight loss, no two people are the same. That's why Noom builds personalized plans based on your unique psychology and biology. Take Brittany. After years of unsustainable diets, Noom helped her lose 20 pounds and keep it off.
I was definitely in a yo-yo cycle for years of just losing weight, gaining weight, and it was exhausting.
And Stephanie. She's a former D1 athlete who knew she couldn't out-train her diet, and she lost 38 pounds.
My relationship to food before Noom was never consistent.
And Evan, he can't stand salads, but he still lost 50 pounds with Noom.
I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. Even through the pickiness, Noom taught me that building better habits builds a healthier lifestyle. I'm not doing this to get to a number. I'm doing this to feel better.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom users compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This week on Trek, Marry, Kill.
Time, Mannheim, fencing.
On the next episode of Star Trek, The Next Generation.
Two to beam directly up to sickbay.
A mission to save a dying scientist uncovers a deadly time experiment.
Captain, it must be stopped.
And reunites the captain with his first love.
We need your help. The situation is not good.
Now, they must save the galaxy from this crippling time distortion.
Only one of us is in the correct time continuum.
On Star Trek, The Next Generation.
Trek, Marry, Kill.
Hi, I'm Brian.
Hi, I'm Kristen.
Welcome to Trek, Marry, Kill, a Star Trek podcast where we dissect and analyze individual episodes across all the different series to determine which ones are worth your valuable time. This week, another one of our wildcard episodes will always have Paris from the first season of Star Trek The Next Generation. It's episode 24 of season one. It debuted in syndication May 2nd, 1988, so we're a bit past the 35th anniversary, written by Deborah Dean Davis and Hannah Louise Shearer, directed by Robert Becker. Memory Alpha's description: Captain Picard encounters a woman from his past after her scientist husband's experiments begin to unravel the fabric of time. This is a woman he stood up. That asshole.
Yeah, in today's parlance, we'd call it ghosting.
He ghosted her on a very important day.
Ghosted the f*** out of her.
The special guest, the woman, Janice, one of the most 80s names that exists that I can think of. Mm-hmm. Janice Mannheim, played by Michelle Phillips, who, when I saw her, when we did the drawing for the episodes, I was like, oh, she's like a soap actress, right? No, obviously not. No. Famous band from the 60s, the Mamas and the Papas. But when I rewatched this episode, I was like, oh, I recognize her from Knot's Landing. And sure enough.
Mm. So that is a soap opera, but that's a primetime soap. I'm less familiar with those.
I see. Do you remember the first time you saw this episode?
No. No, not at all.
I vaguely remember it, and I remember as a child seeing it and then turning the channel, not caring. Like, I saw it at the end. I saw it from, like, when Data is doing the ending where he's dumping the antimatter in the time hole. And then Picard in the holodeck showing Janice the recreation and all that. And I don't know that I was totally clear on what the holodeck was still, maybe. So I was a little like, what's going on here? Are they in Paris? So is this whole episode in Paris? I don't care. Like, that was my thought process. So. The title is taken from Casablanca, obviously. And it's one of those cultural touchstones that I think really belongs to, I think it was actually just been left behind there, last century. Mm-hmm. It's something that feels very familiar to me only because it was something that my grandparents talked about, or certain adults that were cultured, you know, Casablanca being one of the greatest films ever, Paris being the spot for honeymoons, which is still the case today. But like, all this is of Casablanca influencing every level of like TV writing, film writing, mm-hmm. for a good chunk of last century, especially like in the 60s and, you know, 50s, 60s and 70s, you know, because they didn't have home videos, so they thought they could get away with it. Right.
Yeah. It is. Unfortunately, it is the film that kind of started all every screenwriting cliche. But it's not not because it's badly written at all. It's just, it was so good. Everyone just had to sort of steal from it.
Yeah. And I mean,
if you're too young to have seen Casablanca, We'll Always Have Paris is something that the main character, Rick, played by Humphrey Bogart, says to Ilsa, who is played by Ingrid Bergman. And it is referencing their time they had together in Paris during the first days of the Nazi occupation. So, but it was lovely for them. And
they had a good time. Important to note that Rick is an asshole. And so making Jean-Luc Picard the Rick character in the story means he is the asshole, which being the first season of Star Trek, The Next Generation, tracks perfectly. It's totally fine. I have no issue.
But in the movie Casablanca, it's Ilsa who stands up Rick at the train station.
Also, Ilsa is like a fully fleshed out person, human being, and Janice sucks. Or like it's a very poorly underwritten character.
It's a strange character. Let's just put it that way. Like a person who has just seen everyone she knows die and her husband's dying, but she's like, oh, and like just flirting with the captain.
And has absolutely no utility. So while the men are doing their important experiments,
she doesn't know, has no knowledge of the experiments, what theories are going on. And I have to tell you, I had to watch this episode twice while watching. I was like, what the fuck are they talking about? What is going on? Like, what theory? What? How are they going to fix this? Like, I didn't get it. And I had to watch it twice, and I still am like, hazy.
So there's like some specifics I want to get into in just a second, but just to close the book here, nobody in this podcast is trashing Casablanca.
It is one of the greatest
movies of all time. It is one of the greatest screenplays ever written. The performances are incredible. If you are like, so this was my larger point, cultural touchstones, especially ones that belong to last century, Casablanca and the Beatles. Two things I can remember being shoved down my throat to the point that it really took me until, I'm not exaggerating, the end of last century and maybe even the beginning of this century before I actually decided that I should just watch or listen to them and accept them. And obviously, because it's just like, so you had like two generations, you had like World War II people ramming Casablanca, then the boomers. And then it's just like all that stuff. And it's like, this is it. These are the only two things. That's all that matters. It's kind of annoying. Mamas and the Papas, all that stuff. Like their two main hits played ad nauseum. I actually think, I actually prefer Monday, Monday. That was their song, right?
I don't know.
But anyway, it sounds like
maybe it could. I don't know.
We're from California, right? So both of us. So
yes,
we heard that song all the time. So there, everything that this episode was based on were based on things that, as a child, annoyed me. So, soap operas, and it's very soap operatic. The writing. Let's be very clear here. The writing is at the level of a sharp soap opera in this episode. It's an attempt to show a different side of Patrick Stewart as Jean-Luc Picard, to have this love interest come in, very old TV trope. You know, the galaxy is enormous. Space is vast. And yet this one distress call, it's the one that got away.
Of all the gin joints in all the world, Brian.
Of all the planetoids in sensor range.
Yeah. She walks into mine.
So have you ever had like a ships in the night, bad timing, ghosting someone where it seemed like it might have been important and kind of situation?
I've never ghosted anyone. I haven't had like a ships in the night type of relationship. As some people may know, I didn't actually like date anyone until before I met my husband. So I didn't really date at all. So no. But I did have like times when someone sort of like was like confessing their feelings, but it was it was too late. Like, not because one of us was in another relationship. It's like, well, I'm going off to college today or something, or something like that. Or like, I'm moving, like, what are you?
I'm shipping out to Starfleet. Yeah.
Yeah. Something like that. So or just like, okay, I don't know what to do with that information, but wish you would have said something sooner, but not. I've never left anyone at a Paris cafe. Let's put it that way.
Well, because Picard's from Paris, it's like down the street, you know, probably. It's like it's the neighborhood Cafe des Artistes. Yeah, I've had ships in the night, bad timing, all that. I've been ghosted. I'm not sure if I have ghosted. I can't remember, which probably means I have. But
I mean, I'm sure I've ghosted like the back in the days of like AOL Instant Messenger. You just like sort of stop talking to somebody. But we didn't really call it ghosting. We're just like, oh, we're all just going to move on.
And I'm asking all this because the episode deals with dimensions, different dimensions, but also time looping. And so this idea, there is kind of a thematic thrust of the episode. But now let's just get into some specifics here. This episode was hobbled by, well, it being a season one Next Generation episode mainly. Mm-hmm. But secondarily, the writer's strike of 1988 apparently affected the ending of this one. And I dare say it probably impacted their ability to do any revisions on it, because there's a lot of like generic language and lack of specifics. And maybe that extra draft to tie together the science jeopardy and the emotional core. So what's happening is Dr. Paul Manheim has some radical theories about time and space and how our dimensions are merely defined by time. And that if you start playing around with time, you can start mixing dimensions. And he's so confident about his experiments. It basically turns into an Oppenheimer situation. And incredible that this is down the second episode of our show where we're talking about Oppenheimer. But he gets a band of scientists together and they go find a planet that fits all the needs that they think they're going to need for their experiments of creating an opening to another dimension. It's going to require a binary star and a planetoid with an unspecified type of energy at its core. So this is, I was just reading about this the other day. There's like a complaint from some Star Trek fans or a note that, you know, Star Trek got into the big into technobabble, which, you know, and it explained everything with technobabble, this type of radiation, this time of science and science junk. And the original series, they really kind of tried to shy away from that because it wasn't about that. And here you have something in the middle where kind of the idea needs to be clear about what's happening, but they're stuck in the Roddenberry mode of like, let's not be specific. So all we get is like, there's a lot of energy and great quantities of energy, but to do what? To what end? What's the just dimension stuff about? So
yeah,
we've got this Manheim effect where time is burping. It's described as burping, where they're repeating certain moments, which isn't all that exciting when it comes down to it. It's kind of interesting and it's disorienting. But a couple of moments, Picard is fencing at the beginning, which has no tie to the rest of the episode. You know, the fencing doesn't come back in any meaningful way. It's just a thing he's doing. And he replays a move with his sparring partner, fencing partner. The crew and Picard and Riker and Data experience it too. But basically, Manheim's experiments has caused an entanglement with this other dimension, and it's causing time to loop back in it on itself, and it's affecting thousands of light years potentially. So it's a big problem, especially if the barriers between dimensions break down. In October, we're going to have on a pair of guests, Charisse and Andrea from the TNG podcast, where they've been recapping all of Star Trek The Next Generation. And I had listened to their episode on this one, and I'm putting it out in here now because I actually have, which speaks to my point about how maybe this script needed another draft. One of the ideas they had was like, I thought this episode was building towards the time looping so that Picard and Janice have to relive that moment in the cafe where he stands her up. And I'm like, well, yeah, that would have made sense. That would have made the episode
interesting.
So we don't get that.
We don't.
Other notes about this episode. It's the episode right after Tasha Yar's death.
Pouring out for our girl Tasha Yar.
Data uses a contraction in the time fix sequence. There's three of him, and they're trying to figure out which Data is actually in the proper timeline to complete the procedure. And the one in the middle says, "It's me." this is not a note from Memory Alpha. Some of those other notes were, but the guy who plays Dr. Mannheim, who looks like a late 30s, early 40s guy that they aged up, or he's just kind of an odd looking dude. I don't know. No offense. Sorry. But the actor's name is Rod Loomis, featured in many soap operas over the years, but he also played Dr. Sigmund Freud in Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure. He was Freud in that. So hold that thought in mind, because that's important. This episode features two actors who played historical figures in time travel stories. So Rod Loomis, Dr. Mannheim, played Freud in Bill and Ted's. And then the dude Picard is fencing against, this actor's name is Dan Kern, playing Lieutenant Dean, the fencing partner. 5 or 6 years before this episode came out, he appeared in a TV show that lasted one season called Voyagers. And the description of that show, Kristen, is a man and a boy traveling through time fix historical errors. Unclear if they're related. Just a man and a boy.
One guy and an completely unrelated boy.
Yes. Okay. Traveling through time, yes.
But traveling through time.
But Dan Kern played Isaac Newton in one of those episodes. So two times.
Oh, he wasn't even the man traveling. He wasn't even the star.
No, he was a guest actor. Yeah. Also, the sparring, again, Dan Kern played Isaac Newton, the sparring partner, but also in the TV show Voyagers. But also, Dan Kern would appear later in Star Trek Voyager as an alien. So I need to get that out of my brain. They're all connected in ways that are completely meaningless, but there we go. Shall we get into the grades?
Yeah.
All right. Great scenes.
Okay. So I guess the fencing, I don't know, but.
You don't have to be kind to these things.
Okay. So I think for me, when Jean-Luc Picard first goes into the holodeck to the Paris Cafe,
that's my great scene. Yeah.
Okay. So there's a woman sitting there and she's wearing this like two-piece outfit. It's like a pink top and like,
yes.
And the skirt or whatever. I am going to say, I think I could pull this outfit off, and my husband agrees, and I'm upset I don't own it.
I'm not ashamed to admit that I rewatched that scene many times. Her name is Gabrielle. That's the character's name. The actress's name is Isabelle Brousseau. She's a French Canadian from Montreal. And
how do you call that? The sleeves, like
I don't know. I
it's
just
like
say
an off the shoulder sleeve, and then it's like ruffled. So yeah, I was like, no, this is great. I wish I had this outfit right now. Other than it like being made out of cheap polyester, I'd like out of like cotton or something. But yeah.
I will say the HD does absolutely no favors to the terrible material they use to make the costumes on the show in season one.
Oh, so my bad. God.
I don't know what Mannheim's wearing.
Oh, I got other notes about the costumes. That's coming later. But
do you have more from that scene that you want to talk about?
Also, I don't remember that. I've been to Paris only one time, but I didn't remember that many pigeons in the restaurant.
Those could have just been stage pigeons they couldn't clear in time. let's just go with it.
Where's the hawk? Where's the falconer to get these pigeons out of here?
Yeah, everyone knows that stage at Paramount, haunted by pigeons. But no, that scene is, it comes after the first time hiccup in the fencing, and they're on their way, and they hear about Mannheim, and Picard realizes, because he knows that Janice is with this doctor. And he goes to the holodeck to relive the situation. Is this after Counselor Troy comes to him on the bridge and says, can I talk to you? Because I can sense that you're anxious, even though Patrick Stewart prior to that. So they get the whole distress call and they're rushing to like figure. Picard knows that the time hiccup in Mannheim is all connected. And if there's Mannheim, then there's Janice. And Counselor Troy can tell he's agitated. Although, for the audience's sake, they have Patrick Stewart makes the decision to whip his towel multiple times while he's talking about Mannheim. Yeah, it's very odd. But and then Troy is really reacting very big to it. This is on the bridge. This is all happening. But obviously, she's like, "You're anxious, Captain."
Still in his fencing outfit with his sweaty towel. and he starts whipping it around.
Yeah, so he gets himself cleaned up and in uniform, and he's got a little time before they arrive to this planetoid Vandor. And so he stops in the holodeck. But the scene is great because it's like, it's kind of ironically great. I don't know that it's dramatically great, but he goes in effectively to what we learn is relive some element of that moment where he stood up Janice before he shipped up back off to Starfleet. And for some reason, the holodeck, because of the specific details he gave about this Café des Artistes in Paris, that overlooking the Eiffel Tower, it's somehow determined that there must have been a woman there who was stood up. And so it gives Picard the opportunity to kind of talk through this stand-in for Janice, this beautiful French-Canadian woman we just discussed. And I think it's just like the terrible synth music in the hallway that Ron Jones scored, no offense. And then it leads into terrible recording.
The weird guy playing the weird bong.
Yeah, he's stroking off a bong that's jizzing out accordion music. It's really bizarre. It's so
weird. And then there's like somebody on a Zoom call for no reason. Like, why would you go to a restaurant to stand up talking to somebody? It was so weird.
And so, you know, I guess in Gene Roddenberry's 24th century Earth, accordions have been replaced by bong accordions. They need to stroke off. But
yeah, I liked that they still had the old timey espresso machine, giant espresso machines.
Right. And the silver.
At this point, 500 years ago.
Yes. And the metal 80s bookshelf that got repurposed as like a bookshelf again, but it just. The set design is wacky. The lighting, it's all very cheap looking. And I think that was a part as a kid I noticed. I'm like, this looks terrible. And it's supposed to be it's not a stage.
Found a reasonable Paris backdrop. They must have just already had one on the lot somewhere.
I don't know. That's a good point.
Because, like,
I mean, it's not a great drop. Yeah, but it's not drop. But it kind of works because Patrick Stewart is playing it so straight, so seriously. Like, you can tell he's trying to exorcise a demon here. And the very attractive woman he's speaking to is also giving a pretty solid performance back to him. And they're talking about something very melodramatic. It's not like great insight into Picard necessarily, but it's kind of like a nice earnest scene. I think that's where Star Trek actually does kind of work, is when the human beings are being incredibly earnest and everything around them is fucking ridiculous. Like, if you put it on mute and just look at it, you're like, what's going on here? But everyone's really believing the moment they're in. And in the first season of The Next Generation, especially, you don't get a lot of moments where people are behaving even remotely like a real person now or in the future. Uh-huh. So that was nice. Yeah, I had that scene. It was a good scene. And I wonder, Gabrielle.
I want to know, who's the idiot who's ghosting Gabrielle?
Apparently she's been the actor. The actor's been a personal trainer since 1998, working with such stars as Pierce Brosnan. My goodness.
Hey.
I definitely should have hired her when I was using a personal trainer.
Maybe all she's still available.
The next great scene I have is pretty soon after they get to the planet and they, I think they've actually already rescued Mannheim, beamed him up. There was an accident that killed everyone except for he and Janice. And they get up to the ship and he's being taken care of. Picard, Riker, and Data have left this first meeting with Janice, getting an idea of what's going on with Mannheim. He's freaking out in the bio bed because he's like, I'm trapped between dimensions, which is a cool idea that they totally blow.
Having a full on acid freak out.
Yes, that's right. That is what's happening. That's how it's being acted anyway. Yes.
Yeah, that is exactly. And I'm sure Michelle Phillips has seen many of those in her life.
He probably went to her for some advice on how to act.
What do you think about this one?
She's treating him just like, oh, honey, you're going to be fine. No, I'm not.
Yeah, drink some milk. It'll be fine.
But those are not good scenes. I think the next great scene is when they're walking down the hall.
It's like distracting.
I will say, compared to what had come previously in season one, surprisingly not embarrassing to watch. Like, you could get through it and you're not embarrassed for everyone involved, but you're close. But it's still, anyway, Picard, Riker, and Data are walking down the corridor, and they get into a turbo lift and they're talking about, you know, the effects that this is far reaching. Then the turbo lift stops and the door opens up and there's Picard, Riker, and Data talking about what's going on, about to get in, literally moments before, repeating back on itself. I liked it. It was called a burp in time. It was described as a burp by another ship that had been affected by this. And I don't know if you caught this, but Data was starting to go, that's not actually correct.
Yeah, he was going to make a fart joke, wasn't he?
Yep. Yes, he was. That's exactly what was about to happen. So they encounter another time fart. And I thought it was creepy. I liked it. Or it was kind of creepy. It wasn't like great. It was like, oh, that's not bad. It's pretty solid. Next scene I have. I only have two more great scenes after this. But I actually do think this is a pretty great scene. It's after Picard, Riker, Data, and Worf are talking. And then Janice just comes in.
Yeah.
She's like, I was told I could find you here. And Picard's like, no, we were done. You go ahead. And they leave. And she comes in. And they have a conversation. Basically, she just asks him straight out, hey, why didn't you show up that day at the cafe? I thought it was great.
I did like that scene because she's like, just please, like, lie to me, like make up some lie, because
right, because he's an asshole. He's like, oh, I was afraid. Yeah.
Like emergency appendectomy, or yeah, like I forget this. Oh, like, oh, it was raining and he couldn't catch a cab or something, and he's like, no, I was just afraid.
Yeah.
And I gotta say, she's taking this much better than I would, because if I looked like how Michelle Phillips looked when she was in her 20s and I got stood up by Jean-Luc Picard and then got stuck with this acid freakout doctor living alone with just a bunch of nerds on a planet, I would fucking die. I'd be so upset. I'd be just inconsolable.
You know, Michelle Phillips, I don't have any desire to like evaluate her as an actor or anything. She's fine to good in this scene. And Patrick Stewart is like Patrick Stewart levels. And as melodramatic, soap operatic as the writing kind of is, I'm actually, you know what? It's aping Casablanca in this scene. It all works, and I wasn't even that distracted by both of them checking their marks multiple times, which that must have been a weird set.
Bothers you.
Brent Spiner was doing it too, and I was like, there must have just been something about the observation lounge in season one, or the way they were having to like navigate those chairs against so close to the wall, because it's like, I don't know if you noticed, but like the proportions are all different. Like sick bay, the actual where the bed is much smaller, and Crusher's office is much bigger than it is in later seasons. They like shifted that, and then the observation lounge, they're like, the table's very close to the wall, there's like no space around there, so they're all like trying to navigate it. I don't know, but it is funny because he just says, oh, I was afraid. And she's like, you're not even going to lie to me. And then Picard says, oh, I got, and then his performance is like, I got the days confused. If that was Tuesday when it was Wednesday. And then she's like, that's better. And then she says, oh, she's playing it off like, oh, it was raining, you couldn't find a cab. I love the turn. That's what I was getting at. When she goes, it was raining and I waited for you all day. Then it gets a little weird. And then I went to Starfleet and looked for you. But I like the turn, because you go with it and you realize that this is a hurt person, and he plays on that very, very well. Mm-hmm. The final thought on that scene is, though, he lies right to her face. He goes, for a long time, not a day went by when I didn't look up into the sky and wonder. And he looks at her and he says, each time that I returned to Earth, my thoughts were filled with you. Liar! Liar! I did not believe him when he said that.
I also have down that I'd like that Beverly's a little bit jealous, or at least like kind of annoyed.
Yeah, at all. I think
it's like, I got this dying acid freak out guy and you guys are talking about some rendezvous in Paris. Okay. I'm the only one doing a job here. Okay.
Well, she definitely was jealous, but it also seemed like Gates McFadden was annoyed that she had to be playing her as jealous. Yeah. That's what it felt like.
It's just like,
Because even Patrick Stewart or Picard's like, Beverly, it's not that big a deal. She's like, yeah, I know it's not. I don't care. Just this guy's dying. So, yeah. And I don't know what's going on here. And then the last great scene that I have is the scene where Data seals the butthole. So there's no more time.
Yeah, for I like the obstacle course he has to go through. The yes. like last minute constructed obstacle course. One of them is just like fluorescent tubes, lighting right. tubes,
a couple of phasers.
Which, honestly, yes, to, like, if you do break those, it's going to be pretty bad, so you got to be careful. Yeah. And then he's like rolling around ducking laser beams. Yeah,
remember that show American Gladiators? That was very popular. Yes. At this time it was just a little bit of a American Gladiators course he had to get through. Not bad. And then he has I think the time distortion effect, the little energy core thing spiking up, I thought that was cool. That looked neat. And then he has to dump the antimatter in, and it all splits up. So
you get your three Datas.
Yep, exactly. One of them that in the dimension that uses contractions. but surprisingly, for just barely across the line of great scenes in this one. Best Trek tropes. I only have one. If you have other ones, that'll be great. Mm-hmm. But the one that stood out to me the most was a TNG trope. Let Data do it. It's really dangerous to send people down there. Let's just send Data down. And yeah, Data even says, I'm a machine. I'm expendable.
Yeah. I did put in the cold open, they mentioned shore leave. And so I was very excited. But then, you know, we don't get the mention of shore leave again until the very end.
Can I plus that a little bit? Because sure. We do this a lot in Strange New Worlds now. But I think the trope, the full Star Trek trope should be some much needed shore leave.
Yeah.
It's always presented as that. It's like, we're not just on vacation. Never like, it's much needed.
We don't really need this shore leave, but we're doing it anyway.
I have the time and I'm using it. What's the problem? No, it's much needed.
I didn't feel like going in today.
That's right. Shore leave, baby.
I got here when I could. Unfortunately, I've unfortunately said that at work a couple times, but
what? I got here when I could. Did you ever watch the TV show?
Not to like my manager, just like what I got here.
People
when
counting
I
on you. Yeah. So, yeah. Did you ever watch that TV show Strangers with Candy?
Yeah.
For some reason, it just reminded me of the line. Well, we came as soon as we felt like it.
Yeah.
What other ones did you have?
Using the holodeck to get through some personal shit.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one. Yeah.
Through it. We had a countdown at the end with Data dropping the antimatter thing into the butt crack or butthole, whatever we're calling it. That's it.
Worst Trek tropes. Same situation. Only one really stood out to me. And I'm not so sure that this actually counts, but men being wimps when it comes to their true feelings towards women. Yeah. Maybe I'm like having a weird, not PTSD, but weird echo of like Strange New Worlds being very fresh in my mind. But just this idea that when confronted with the woman they have feelings for or had feelings for, Starfleet captains like turn into little boys or like, you know, writers. And it's kind of annoying. Like, we don't really get that with Kirk. I kind of is there in Star Trek 2, I guess, but he and Carol have like a different relationship. I don't know. It's like, except for Kirk, all the men in Star Trek are really weird about when they actually care about a woman. Is that saying something about when men really care about women? I don't know. Maybe, I guess.
Jesus, I hope not. I put first season Counselor Troy being borderline useless.
Oh, that's great. Fantastic. Oh, I mean,
later season Troy would be able to have sussed some things out, I think.
She probably would have recommended the holodeck and Picard would have said, this is stupid. And she's like, this is literally what it's here for.
She's useless in this.
You're the perfect person to ask this since you are right on wigs. And I think I've admitted this before. I am so stupid when it comes to spotting wigs. I did not know she was wearing a wig.
Well, I didn't really know she was wearing a wig until I really thought about it. But like, if she's not wearing a wig, though, I mean, she had like extensions at the very least.
Well, in the child, when her hair is long, like all that curly length, that's a wig. But then even in this one, I'm like, is the wig just the whole bun thing scooped over her head, or some of that are real hair mixed with the wig? It looked like the lines all look like it was just one helmet wig that she
was wearing. Yeah, it's probably just one wig. It's a really difficult to do the blending of regular hair and wig on something like this. Like, you're just going to put the wig on and go.
But I couldn't unsee it once I suspected it was there. I'm like, yeah, that's a helmet. Weird.
Oh, I had some more worst Trek tropes.
Oh, keep going.
I thought that Michelle Phillips did do a little bit of the Dynasty acting, like the primetime soap opera guest star acting. But that's kind of just her, I think that was kind of her bread and butter at the time, so I can't really fault her that bad. But
are you putting that in Trek trope or of its time? That's a clear of its time.
I think I put it on the wrong spot. Sorry, I put it under Trek tropes, but it should have been under most of its time. So I did put that Dr. Mannheim, he's dying, but he kind of looks like a young SNL character in makeup.
Yes!
Like in his close-up. He looks like it's Bill Hader when he's like in his 20s or something. They have like the fake gray eyebrows on him and everything. But like, he doesn't have like any wrinkles.
Yeah, like Daryl Hammond when he plays Sean Connery back in the Celebrity Jeopardy thing. Yeah, it's...
And Star Trek trope. They're always like, anyone who's supposed to be looking older, it kind of looks like that makeup.
Right. Most of its time quality.
So we had the sparkly fencing costumes made of the cheap polyester. And we had Michelle Phillips' costume. Oh my God.
That just looked like wallpaper.
Okay, so she was wearing like the Jaipur's pants. It had cutouts at the side. She's not wearing a bra. And she's wearing boots as well. Like the puffy hammer pants are tucked into the boots.
Yeah, and she looked like she was in V. Yeah.
Michelle Phillips, you still look great at 44. How about we put you in this fucking wild ass outfit, no bra? Just nipples wilding. And she was like,
We want to dress you like one of the children from the Star Wars holiday special. So.
And that also is like a polyester, or like a Lycra at the very, like, I mean, yes, a synthetic fabric, but it's like a Lycra, like a shiny Lycra type fabric that has like the print of like a very bad 80s couch.
If anyone is younger and wondering what the 80s were like, this episode is really great insight into here.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's all very 80s. I have the treatment of women in this one. I kind of already touched on this. We don't know anything about Janice Mannheim except her relationship to men. You know, she's desperate for Jean-Luc. He stands her up. And then she's just literally a doll in Dr. Mannheim's house. All right, we're going to go work now. Now you go back in your dollhouse where it's safe. And then on top of that, she's just okay with going back with him at the end. I think the ending is like a complete, he's like, it'll be different this time. And we can't let all the people who died, we can't let their deaths be in vain. We have to continue this very dangerous work that I acknowledge was very dangerous, but you have to come back with me and be on this planetoid alone. Just like, okay, it's totally fine. But on top of that,
I was like, girl, what are you thinking? Oh my God.
So, and it kind of is, what really jumped out at me about all that was Picard has a throwaway line when Riker asks him, do you know about Dr. Mannheim? And he goes, well, he taught at the university in Paris. So was she his student?
Yeah, had to be, right?
That's the implication. It was that Janice and slept with her professor, which means she has some understanding.
Go on a lot.
Oh, sure, absolutely. It would be, especially if he's like a young guy pretending to be old. Yeah, absolutely. Maybe that's what's going on. He's pretending to be old, so people respect him more. But it's also like, so does that mean? I mean, he wasn't just like teaching undergrad core classes. Right? As like part of the curriculum requirement,
maybe,
the teaching requirement. They have TAs for that. In the 24th century, that's like AI shit. That's like, Come to my office hours. Beam in.
Well, it's only supposed to be 15 years prior. And Michelle Phillips was 44 when this was filmed. So, like, maybe she was a grad student or something.
But she wasn't a professor either. You know what I mean? Like, she has, there's nothing. And we're just left to guess.
Well, we don't know. Yeah. We have no idea. Yeah,
we don't know anything about her. And then the other part is just like, beyond that, it's like women as caretaker to men. That's what she's doing, like guiding him through his trip. Again, a cool idea, him caught between dimensions. It's too bad they didn't like have any money or creativity to envision any of that. That would have been awesome. And the new shows would not have dropped that opportunity, and it would have been cool. It would look cool. But the other part is like, he's when he's freaking out. Do you remember that part where Dr. Crusher is like scanning him? She can't figure out what's wrong. And then she like caresses him to like soothe him. I was like, what? That's so weird. My doctor did that to me. I'd be very weirded out. But anyway.
Just calm down.
Yeah, exactly. Just the way women treat men or react to men in this episode. Very strange. Very of its time, too, though. Any more for you? Or any for you?
Well, the music cues are just so weird. Like, wow. Just, I can't even just... I mean, it's all the Space Mountain music, and you know, it's
Now it's time for the line must be drawn here. Great lines. I really only put down one because I thought Picard's line, "Each time that I return to Earth, my thoughts are filled with you," I just thought that was such a bullshit line that I just, that can't be great. He's lying to her. So I had Riker reacting to the Mannheim effect, the time fart. This is where we started. If we are us, I just like that line. So, that's any for you?
Just when they're doing the fencing, when the lieutenant says, "What technique was that, Captain?" And he says, "The technique of a desperate man." Ha ha ha. That's it. I tried. I watched it twice. Couldn't find anything else. I was like, "Oh yes, perfect."
I did think that their dialogue is melodramatic or Casablanca ripoff E, as it is in the observation lounge between the two of them. You know, you're not even going to lie to me. And then he says, "Oh, I went to the wrong cafe." And then she's like, "Oh, it was raining." I thought it was all right. Like, great lines. I don't know. It was more performance. And also knowing it's intentionally a derivative of something that's actually great. I give it no credit. So there we go.
Do you also think, so like the end, the scene where they go, where Picard brings her back to the cafe. Like, is that like, I feel like there's no real payoff there. She's just like, "None. Oh, here it is." Anyway.
Men. That scene is more memorable because she is amazed by the holodeck and doesn't understand it. And that's really kind of more what the scene is about than anything else. And that could just be like, okay, we've let the captain be vulnerable now, but now we have to show that he's back in control here. It's a nothing scene. It pays off nothing.
Yeah. So but I feel kind like of, the alternative, having them actually having to relive the real thing would have been much more interesting.
Now, one of the other, them reliving it would have been better. But also there was another note that I didn't mention, but the writers actually wanted Picard and Janice to hook up. Well, and I guess
definitely not happening because, as we all know, Picard isn't going to steal the deal.
Right. But I guess even Patrick Stewart, all the producers, they were firmly against that. I guess they saw themselves, cheating. Picard wouldn't do that. And I guess I could see that. But also it's like a weird, I thought this was Gene Roddenberry's future where it's all like free love and all that stuff. So who cares? But anyway.
And your girl, Gabrielle, wasn't even in the holodeck this time. So
my girl, my goodness. I mean, I'm surprised you like her.
She has lightish hair.
Great call. This is good friendship between us. Kristen addressing that I am very pro brunette. I didn't say anti blonde, just pro brunette. But she a credit to her for how she appears.
She has a certain je ne sais quoi.
Yes. The Anton Caridian Award for Best Performance. I'm going to give it to Patrick Stewart as Jean-Luc Picard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think so.
In fairness, the material has at least enough moments of being grounded that it makes it easier for him to do that. Sometimes there were parts of this episode that were so generic, the science stuff. It's just like it took me back to earlier in the first season. I'm like, how did anyone survive this show? How did the show last?
Yeah, the science stuff in this one was so over my head, but didn't make any sense. Like, I was like, oh, am I just dumb? But no, it just didn't make any sense.
There was just nothing to grab onto. The stakes, it was all fuzzy. Like, it was unclear what the stakes were, what anything meant. And I like that the show gets more interesting and clear about that stuff later on. The Shatner. I'm giving it to Dr. Paul Mannheim,
yeah.
Rod Loomis.
Yeah, absolutely. There's no other person could go to. Like,
they were like, listen, we have this whole sequence of you
by a country mile. Okay.
They probably were like, we have this whole sequence of you tripping out storyboarded, but we couldn't afford it. So you've got to like imagine that you're doing that and then perform as though we were shooting it. And that's what he did. I want to give an honorable mention, though, also to Patrick Stewart as Jean-Luc Picard.
Oh, no.
Because I think there are just moments where he's having to go for it. And, like, the way they write him, I don't know if the towel slap counts as that, but you cited it, that it was distracting. It was a weird choice. The fact that he doesn't identify himself immediately when they get to the planet, because he doesn't, you know, that's part of what I was saying before about the bad Trek trope. Like, he's so nervous about seeing this woman, they won't even identify himself on the comms when they arrive to save them. It's bizarre. And so there are just like a couple of moments where Patrick Stewart has to play Picard as suave, but then he also has to play him as nervous. And I don't think it's a matter of him not being Humphrey Bogart. I think it's just a matter of the writing letting him down because it's not Casablanca. But like when Rick is flummoxed, he's still vaguely Rick, right? And here when he's Picard, it's like, it's bizarre. But let's go back to Dr. Loomis. Wow. That guy. Dr. Mannheim, sorry.
Dr. Mannheim. Dr. Loomis is on ER. So Dr. Mannheim is going for it, and it doesn't match like the performance of anybody else around him, which usually is like a clue to some performers that maybe I need to tone it down. But maybe there was no notes from the directors like, yeah, you're doing great. Perfect.
It's a performance that almost made me consider, should we be calling this the Mannheim?
Ooh. Ooh.
We don't have to make a decision now, but I just, listener.
Yeah, I didn't even think about
it. Definitely check it out. It's quite a sight to behold. So, what part of this episode will they teach at Starfleet Academy?
I guess Dr. Mannheim's theories and what a fucking weirdo he is.
Yeah. I guess the Mannheim effect, the space fart. But it's so weird because he's saying that he's created a portal to other dimensions and he's kind of describing it as like there's life there and it's something we can't imagine, but it's also playing with time and time loops. But it's like, is this, you know, Star Trek The Next Generation will go on to play with other dimensions. Worf literally hops dimensions in parallels where he's, you know, changing alternate realities. Isn't that what dimensions kind of are too? Mm-hmm. And then Voyager has fluidic space. Species 8472 is from another dimension where space is liquid. You know, it's just like there's other elements in there. And the lack of specifics in this episode between the energy and what he's talking about and the barriers, it's all kind of frustrating. So maybe they'll just teach that Mannheim was a crank who had like half a good idea and this one experiment was kind of
and almost destroyed the universe or something.
Yes. He's like
didn't arrest him for some reason. I don't know. He's still out there.
He's like shitty Oppenheimer is basically what happened. But also I think they're teaching the cadets about like holodeck courtesy or you know what I mean? They're like holodeck existence. This episode kind of affirmed my theory that at least you could make an argument that holodecks were designed by Starfleet scientists to prevent space madness. And so like general population, people who live on planets have normal lives, not in Starfleet, not doing long space voyages, that it's all kind of new to them. And like the technology expanding galactically, it wasn't instantaneous.
So it wasn't like everyone has a holodeck at home.
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
Because the way that she reacts to it, and everyone in the first season is just amazed by the holodeck. It just seems like they'd be teaching the cadets like, okay, here's a holodeck. Here's how you use it. Don't be an asshole. Try not to get your jizz everywhere. That kind of stuff. Lower Decks makes it very clear that you have to clean up the grime.
Yeah. Those fluids stay. Yeah,
they got to go somewhere. Yep. And then credit to
you. They don't have like a cleaning the holodeck thing. Like, you know how like clean public toilets, like just like a spray thing just comes and like sprays the whole thing down.
Well, I mean, Lower Decks didn't have to give in to classism, but it really does seem like they're like, no, you got to earn your place here.
Yeah.
You start with the grunt work. credit to you for spotting this right away and saying we needed to change this. So next question, what part of this episode is Picard embellishing or omitting from his memoirs? We're bringing it back from Picard season 3. Great idea. What do you have?
I think he's probably omitting or finessing a bit the story about how he stood up a hot woman because he was afraid.
I think it would be the afraid part that he, because I think he would recognize, I have to show in my youth, this is all part of a chapter of me being impetuous and unsettled, that I think he would own up like he does in this episode. About like, yeah, I did that. No question. My reasons were terrible, whatever they were. And you're right. I don't think he'd say like, I was afraid. But I think her point is more valid. It was like, you would have been bored if we were together. You wanted to be an adventurer. And I think that was definitely true. And that was another reason why I liked the scene. He's like, am I that transparent? And she's like, you are to me. Which, that's the hokey line. But that's still like a good... I'm fine when characters run into characters. That's real to me, that there are people that you interact with in your life that either see you in a way that no one else does, but it is so clear, or they see a part of you that no one else has seen before. And they just know you from this specific way. That all felt true. Too bad that doesn't get paid off. He doesn't know anything about her. He doesn't seem to care.
Nope.
Do you think he will?
Do you have any children? Oh, I don't know. Or did they all die back there on the planet? No. We'll never know. Never going to inquire about that.
Do you think he'll embellish any of that, like about what he found interesting in her, about her, or anything like that?
It's hard to say because he seems so uninterested in her life. So
very I me me. I stood you up. What does this mean for me as the captain of the Starship Enterprise? All right, here we go. Trek, marry, or kill, will always have Paris.
I really don't like this episode. I'm sorry to say.
Who are you apologizing to? Oh, the super fans who love every episode exactly the same. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm also giving it a soft kill, or I'm standing it up. If that means it dies.
Yeah, I'm ghosting it. I'm ghosting this episode. Yeah, I'm killing this episode. It's like a half-baked idea.
Yeah. It really needed at least one more draft to tie the science jeopardy and the emotional stuff together.
We don't have the character development enough to make it that interesting. So.
Right. Like that scene in the observation lounge between them, like you said, it needed a payoff in the holodeck or something that some truth came of it. Could you imagine if they did this episode again today, though, if like this was like an arc in Strange New Worlds and like the week before a character had died, like half this episode would have been about Tasha Yar died and now we need to, oh, it reminded me of the people I've left. You know what I mean? Like it would have some sort of weird connection to that. I kind of like the clean.
Tasha Yar, oh, she's dead.
She's dead.
Can't send her.
Now, apparently she's in a shot, like her arm is, because they shot it out of order or something. And because Worf is now at the tactical station, but her arm appears briefly in this episode, even though she died the week before. But yeah, we'll always have Paris. You know what? I'm grateful that I really do suspect this will be the last time I encounter or say that phrase until I watch Casablanca again in the future. But I'm so sick of it. The fact that there is a movie in the 90s called Forget Paris, starring Billy Crystal and I believe Deborah Winger. It's pretty good. Yeah. It's the one where he plays an NBA ref. And that is that movie in the 90s. We're like, we are sick of Paris.
Being a thing.
Get it out of the pop culture. It's annoying. So here we go. We have killed. we'll always have Paris, the phrase, the concept, and certainly the episode of Star Trek Next Generation. Next week, we'll be returning to the original series to ask the question, what is brain? As Kristen and I look at the classic question mark episode Spock's Brain. Have you ever seen Spock's Brain before?
I'm sure I have, but I'm very excited. After our last original series episode, I'm thirsty for more.
Be sure to rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. Give us 5 stars there or right in your Spotify app, wherever you listen to podcasts. We'd appreciate it. You can also follow us online on Twitter and Instagram at TrekMaryKpod. And we have a website, TrekMaryKillPod.com, which has all our links and standings of everything we've graded so far, including this one, which, again, we killed it. So until next week, TMK out.